This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, final hour of our week here. It's Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN, Seattle, 710sports.com. We got a little game preview gearing up for the Seahawks and Broncos. 1:25 kickoff here on 710 ESPN, Seattle. Looking forward to that and finally getting this season started. Of course, as we've been talking, when did we first start talking about this? Like a few weeks ago, that eventually there was going to be a hit piece coming out before the season on the breakup of the Seahawks, that it would anonymously or on the record essentially come from Richard Sherman, just like the Seth Wickersham piece did. And sure enough, today it drops. Greg Bishop, Robert Klemko with some reporting by Albert Breer. It's up at SI.com or the Monday Morning Quarterback. And it's worth a read. It's called The Dynasty That Never Was, Inside the Unraveling of the Seattle Seahawks. And you try to figure out, okay, why? Why is this piece here? Why does it get written? And I have a few thoughts on it, Brock. I mean, I think when you've had a team, and you heard some of that anger come out yesterday when we talked to Schlereth and Evans, a team that has dominated news headlines for the past 6 or 7 years, had the possibility of being the defining team of this decade, and unfortunately, I don't know whether you can still say that because all they've done is win one Super Bowl. When they've had as many high-profile, crazy endings to games on national TV, whether it be the Fail Mary or the hit through the back of the end zone or the win over Green Bay in the championship game or the ends of the Super Bowl. I mean, like, there's a million of these really crazy endings that have involved the Seahawks, and everybody knows about them. Add to that a guy like Russell Wilson, who is polarizing in his own right for his style of play and his personality. Players that were as loud and brash and confident and arrogant as the guys that they've had here. A coach like Pete Carroll, who does things differently from the other 31 coaches in the league. And a guy, and just put it all together into one mixed up pot, you almost can't help but have this article come out like this.
And I would say when you've got a bunch that want to have the final word always and will never look to themselves, never blame themselves, but point fingers and blame everybody else, articles like this will come out. It's why it came out with Wickersham. It's why it comes out a couple years later again. I'm just disappointed. And I would love Richard Sherman to say, why don't you come out on the record with this stuff? Everybody knows. Why don't you just come out on the record? Right? I believe with every fiber of my being, he is the impetus of both of these pieces. Now, other guys talked, and Tony McDaniel certainly got on the record. By the way, do you know he wanted more playing time?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tony McDaniel definitely did. And Cliff Averill was on the record. A few guys were on the record. Why weren't you on the record? Why won't you just put it out there? You know, but instead, you just point fingers and throw people under the bus, and you continue to go about it. And not surprised at all, we knew that heading into the season, as he's now the enemy on the other side, that he would continue to throw shade Russell and Pete's way.
Let me just sort of run through. I think it's a good point, Brock.
Isn't it funny that even if he was on the record, he might just later deny that he was on the record?
Probably.
Like, I mean,
there's no proof.
There's records in the past that have been.
Nobody can prove it.
Yeah, right?
Nobody can prove that's what I said. Let's sort of just run through what's in here. So if you haven't read it, let me give you just kind of a quick rundown of what's in here. There are players, both past and present, who believe special treatment led to the undoing of this dynasty. There are players that believe Pete thought Russ couldn't handle competition. There are players that believe Russell's a narc and that he gets all kinds of special treatment. There are players that are furious about personnel decisions that weren't based on competition in their view, like letting go of Tony McDaniel, Malcolm Smith, and Kaysen Williams, three guys that have apparently torn apart this locker room. And then, of course, that the Super Bowl decision was all about Russell wanting to be, or the team wanting Russell to be the MVP instead of Marshawn Lynch. And that after the game, Marshawn was there saying that he was robbed of assuming the MVP, maybe of the Super Bowl. It's a little hard to tell. But ultimately, those are sort of the arguments made by the players that are commenting to these group of reporters. And I think that I believe that's what they believe.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's anything wrong with the reporting here.
Nope.
I honestly think that that's what those guys believe. Where I'm not sure is that they're right, because I don't think they are.
And good luck trying to find it. Good luck trying to find it anywhere, in any environment, in any culture. Just good luck to that. I encourage you and I cheer you on from afar, Richard and Michael and all the rest that are elsewhere. I shouldn't put Michael in that boat. I think he knew it, and I think he was in Tampa. I think he was other places and knew, and in fact was the one that would get into the face of Richard and some of these others. Like, you all just don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just don't know, and there is no perfect utopia when you're dealing with 53 grown competitive men, and especially when they have been empowered the way that Pete really empowered them in building the whole program up. By the way, Russell did respond.
He did?
Yeah, if you're wondering. On Trace Me.
It just got, Trace Me, of course.
Yes, it just got posted on his
Trace
Me.
What is it? What does he say?
He gives, I don't know, 7-8 paragraph deal here. And at the end of it, he said, I hold myself to the highest standards. I'll continue to lift others up. Respect all. Help lead this team to greatness and on to the Super Bowl. This is the year for us. This is a year for building, for bonding, for being champions. Huddle up. It's game time.
Wow.
And that was at the end of it. It wasn't as if, you know, it's point counterpoint to everything he said, but it's Russell. And it's, you know, Russell's response getting ready for this season and once again trying to, you know, never cast blame on others.
You know, Brock, I'll read more of this. I just found it. At first, it wouldn't pull up here on my screen. Every day, I wake up grateful that God has blessed me with the opportunity to play the game I love. I'm just going to skip through some of this. Practice is where we create goals and build our foundation of trust. Football is not an individual trust. That's an interesting word. Football is not an individual sport. A team is made up of many dynamics, and each player has a unique skill set that makes him among the best in the division. Take Tyler Lockett, for example. That man was born to run, no question about it. As soon as that ball's in his hands, he's down the field. It's an instinct. Then there are the guys who just seem to know how to make big plays at the right time, like Doug Baldwin. He's so clutch. No matter when we're playing or who we're up against, he always follows through. KJ Wright, a.k.a. Spider-Man, is incredible. His prowess as a linebacker is truly extraordinary. Surrounding yourself with the right people is highly important in order to succeed. All the guys on the team are impressive to watch and learn from. As a quarterback, I'm especially grateful to have a leader on our O-line like Justin Britt. He's the one who literally has my back every single play and supports the entire team individually and as a whole. The power of influence is another great quality that's mastered by Dwayne Brown. Although he joined the team last year, he owns the field and helps maintain cohesion. Man, there's a real interesting words being thrown out here by Russ, and I'm just reading this for the first time. Watching the twins, Shaquem and Shaquille, embrace one another on a daily basis is one of my biggest inspirations this year. Watching two brothers who grew up together, played together, shed tears and laughter together, shared life together, and once again, getting the opportunity to share the field together in the NFL is the gift of inspiration that keeps on giving. Watching Shaquem dominate the game of football with only one hand demonstrates why we should never give up. He's not only an inspiration to me, but an inspiration all over the world. Our power is also due to the man who never sleeps, a bubblegum-chewing fanatic, the one and only Coach Pete Carroll, works the details, and he puts the time and effort to prepare for us every play and every situation. His passion is what has kept us together as a team through thick and thin. Through thick and thin. It's because of him that my love for the game has reached highs I never thought imaginable. I mean, we got a text here. I have chills. I often think Russell's a huge dork, and I got chills reading that and how much better what he has to say is than the sniping, obnoxious comments coming from Santa Clara. There's a text here that we got a few minutes ago. Let me see if I can find it, Brock, because I think this honestly puts it all together perfectly. It says, where is it? Hold on. I'm sorry. I'm looking to That's find right. it, and the way this machine works, it's not always perfect. It boils down to this for me, it says. Sherman picks off Russell in practice. Sherm is the type to yell, "You blanking suck." And Russ is the type to yell, "Great catch." Both are all-time greats, but who do you want to build your culture around? Mm-hmm. Always compete doesn't mean always demean your opponent. And yes, it's quite possible to criticize Russ without shouting ridiculous insults.
Hmm. Yeah, man. It's pretty deep. I think that's why you get a few little goosebumps. It's why my mind races here as I'm a few miles from you today, right? It goes back to so many of my stories of playing the position and what it's all about, you know, and all the glory that comes with it. And man, there's a lot of glory and opportunity. And, you know, the other side that you've got to live with and that you've got to own and the responsibility that also falls on your shoulder, and you will never please everybody. And if you're out to please everybody, you will please nobody. And, you know, I think Russell navigates this pretty darn well. Perfect? Nope. quirky. Yep. Hard time relating to teammates at times. Absolutely. You know, is there some kernels of truth in a lot of this? Could he have been demanded more if Schottenheimer, not Daryl Bevel, but an OC with a huge ego and a big old backbone and spine, could have challenged him maybe more privately or times even publicly? Would that have changed any of the perception of Richard and those guys? Quite possibly, but it didn't. And, you know, they have a Super Bowl ring, nearly a second. And, boy, man, some pretty good contracts for everybody that was spouting a lot of wrath and anger in that article.
206-421-3776. Man, Darren is in Spokane. Good morning, Darren. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, good morning. I think the article points out one of the features of the Seahawks that's really the most lacking, and that they love their players too much. Honestly, the Legion of Boom was around because the Seahawks hung on to players far past their prime. I mean, they could have done like the Patriots have long done. They get players that perform and excel, clear up into the Super Bowl. They trade them off for knowing that they only have a few years left. But we loved them. We saw Cam's career go clear to the end. And I just worry that, you know, it's that there's a difference between team and the love we have for it or a business. Sometimes
yeah, you know what? Hold on, Darren. Can I jump in there? I'm sorry to cut you off. I'll let you keep talking. But let me jump in for a second. Is that what happened here? You're right. They did allow some of these guys to get into their third contract. But ultimately, a lot of the sour grapes here are no different from what you've gotten from Asante Samuel, Ty Law, and others who ended up getting booted by the Patriots regime. Once you're out, you're angry. And they're angry in this article because they had to make business decisions on guys like Golden Tate and Tony McDaniel and Bruce Irvin and all the guys that they thought should have stayed, what, instead of Russell? I mean, like, I think that the Seahawks, they haven't been perfect in this, and there's a few guys that they continued to keep around longer than they should have, but it sure seems like those same guys are angry that they didn't keep everyone around forever as if that was some sort of a possibility.
Absolutely true, and I think that's why we see those cohesive units built in with individuals. But the reality is Marshawn Lynch is on the backside of his career. Russell, we all saw Sherman, even though we loved him, we saw him on the backside of his ability. And we saw the injuries starting to pile up. And the same with Cam Chancellor. And because they're such icons, it's hard to let go of those icons. You know, the Mariners are hanging on to Keith Felix. I don't think that anybody can look at that and say that they could have traded him off 2 years ago for a tremendous amount of talent. But
we love
our icons and we hang on to
them. It's interesting. Salk, I'm curious. Thank you for the phone call over there in Spokane. Salk's Town, drive by Salk Middle School, say hello. If you were to have to write an article and say, okay, why didn't this work? In the end, why didn't this just dynasty happen? And if you had to coin a piece, 3,000 words or a couple thousand words, what would it be? Where would you point to?
Let me think on it. Let me see. Okay. I don't want to just answer off the top
because,
of my head. So let me think on that for a
quite
second.
Honestly, for me, I think I have said this, you know, skirted around a little bit, but, you know, push comes to shove when this piece comes out. My counterpoint would be the number one rule broken. This thing fell apart because the only rule in the bubblegum chewing, you know, high character, high personality, everything else, the number one rule was broken, and that was protect the team. And it was broken, and there was no discipline. It was broken, and that cast characters, to that caller's point, just continued to show up and continued to do whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted, however they wanted, all the way up to flipping their coaches off on the sidelines and throwing them right under the bus repeatedly. To me, that had a whole lot more to do than how a quarterback was treated or not treated by their head coach.
I don't think that there's anything I would have come up with that would be better than that. So great answer. 206-421-3776.
I've been thinking about it for 2 hours.
I think you're right, but Brock, you've been consistent about that from day one. You said that about Marshawn Lynch and not making him practice. You said that about the way they handled bringing him back. You said that about Richard Sherman when we talked about kumbaya rooms and was jumping around and mad on the sideline and couldn't be brought into the fold. You've been clear about that from day one, that if rule number one is protect the team, they haven't all done a good job of that. And that's probably where it's on Pete and John to enforce even more discipline when it comes to it. Look, this was always the worry about Pete, right?
Yep.
The fear from day one was, can he coach men? Can he maintain discipline and control? And he showed us in the first few years that he could. Even with a rambunctious group like the one he brought in, he maintained control. In the last few years, it sure seems like that slipped a little bit. And I think in a quiet moment, maybe not publicly, I think Pete and or John would admit that. I also think this offseason was very much about fixing that problem, about jettisoning Richard Sherman, jettisoning Michael Bennett, moving on. Cam Chancellor and Cliff Averill had to be done. Earl Thomas, we're not capitulating to your demands. Jimmy Graham, goodbye. It's about building a team back up the way they wanted it with them in charge and not making that same mistake again. So I do think they made some mistakes. I also think that there's some real, real backwards commentary from some of the players in the way they viewed a lot of these situations. 206-421-3776. Let's grab Adriana in Idaho. A lot of calls from Idaho today. Big day. What's up, Adriana?
Hi, thanks for having me on. So I just want to talk about all those people that are saying, oh, you know, SI, they're just trying to stir the pot with the timing of this. It's horrible. They're not saying anything new. Well, I think the timing is great, and I'm actually taking a big positive out of this. You know, I spent the whole off season really mourning the loss of these players of my team. You know, I love Sherm. I love the defense, and it just all seemed like it was falling apart, and I felt like the culture of, you know, the Hawks, where they really embraced everybody's individuality, was going away, and I was so sad about it. And now, looking at it from this perspective, I'm thinking, wow, if they're going to be that petty and selfish and immature about this, then all right, let's move on. And I'm okay with that. And it, to me, this is like really cathartic. So I am happy about it.
That's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool point. You know, that and I bet you there, and certainly Russell and his people, and Pete and his staff, and some of the players, and there's so much new there. I mean, the Will Disleys of the world, these rookies, I don't even know if they're going to read this. Like, really? This is how it used to be? There's only, what, six left, as Greg wrote about? That's it? That's all that is left on this team, right, from some of those years, and certainly the Super Bowl winning year. And I think that's a solid call, that this can be a galvanizing factor of, yeah, man, this is all new. This is so new, and it's on the shoulders of number three, and on Dwayne Brown, and on Justin Britt, and on Tyler Lockett, and on Bobby Wagner.
Brock, that's all good, but the question is, to go with it, is there enough talent? And we don't know the answer to that yet. That group had, you know, obviously a lot of individualism. It's so interesting. They love that Pete Carroll gave them their individuality, but yep, didn't want Russ to have his. Like, Pete allowed them to all be the way they were, but we want Russ to be more like us. Well, everyone is saying you can all be yourself, and I don't know why you would have a problem with that, but whatever, it's a side note. That group also had an immense amount of talent.
Sure did.
Say what you want about the attitude or whatever, they had an immense amount of talent, and we're going to have to find out whether or not the current group has that as well.
And those were the waters that Pete always navigated.
That's right.
And said to us repeatedly, man, I love it. I love this cast of characters. I love the color that they bring. I love the Oakland Raiders nature of it.
Yep.
Would other people do it this way? Nope. Not standard way. But he loved it, and he tried to walk that line. What did he used to say to us? On the edge, man. Got to be right on the edge. Yeah, many times it was on the edge and unfortunately went off the cliff, as I think some of these anecdotes now point out.
Yeah, a lot of phone calls here. Phone lines have been jammed essentially all morning. Let me read you just a little more from the article. These are a couple of the quotes that I thought were most interesting. It starts at Sherman's wedding in the Dominican, where some players were also saluting his escape to San Francisco. Away from the Seattle organization, a handful of players had referred to in private as the Titanic for a better part of the year. What one Seahawk describes as the dynasty that never was, and some players' lingering disdain for quarterback Russell Wilson. When you read or listen to Russell's comments there about what this season is going to be and the players on his team, how could you have disdain for him?
Yeah.
Disdain? I mean, it just sounds so backwards. But a dozen sources with direct knowledge of the Seahawks' internal dynamics who spoke to SI this summer also pointed to a locker room they contend had fractured last season, with private spats spilling into public view and a rift deepening between those who supported Wilson and those who felt the coaches held him to a different standard. Yep. The overhaul, those sources maintain, was a direct result of that dissension. It was the management in Seattle deciding to take the power back, according to two departed Seahawks. That Pete Carroll and general manager John Schneider can feel the pressure mounting. that after, I mean, it goes on, but there's a bunch of sort of the gist of what's in this article, and it's worth your read, SI.com. They did a good job with this.
And there's absolutely truth in that. I absolutely believe, as Greg Bishop said, you can find a dozen guys, both past and present, that just don't know and love the way that, you know, maybe Russell loves his teammates or leads his teammates or relates to his teammates or any of these narratives that we have talked about for years. Yeah, I do believe that. I do believe that Schottenheimer was brought in here, right? That Daryl Bevel just could not challenge Russell maybe in some ways. Not that I think Russell needs to be challenged, but, you know, to his peers and to that locker room, to the organization. You got a guy with a backbone and a spine that's willing both privately and publicly, you know, to demand an awful lot of him. But, man, I'd be real careful. I'd be real careful nitpicking at all the things that Russell isn't and losing sight of all the things that he sure is.
Yeah, text message, disdain actually equals jealous. You may very well be right on that. 206-421-3776. Let's grab Jared, who's been calling, hanging on in Arlington. Good morning, Jared.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
What's up?
Hey, well, I just, when I was talking to Kyle before I got on it, I don't have a problem with the reporting. I don't have a problem with the article. I didn't have a problem with the Wickersham thing. I think most of it is probably true, but I just don't care.
You
know,
what do you mean?
Richard is my favorite Seahawk that's ever played. Even today, even after all of the acrimonious things that have gone on when he left, you know, watching Prime Sherm dominate on the field and go nuts on the microphone, mm-hmm. was high cinema,
mm-hmm.
you know, but, you know, these guys are angry with Russell for a situation that he didn't create. You know, Russ gets paid because quarterbacks get paid. It's not his fault.
I can tell that you don't care.
Doug gets irritated with Russ because they're not the same, but Doug finds a way to make it work.
Right.
You know, these other guys that have left that are, you know, sour grapes, you know, I can see why people would get frustrated with Russell.
Yeah.
His Carlton act, his weird mannerisms, his goofiness is not like the other guys.
Right.
So these are all alpha males who have been the best player on every team they've ever played on, and they're used to doing things the same way all the time.
I don't mean to laugh at you, Jared. I think these are great comments, and I don't mean to laugh at you, but what do you mean you don't care?
Jared, you could talk for a half hour.
Jared,
we obviously care.
We could blow through our
commercials, Jared. No.
What
at 9:55, start to play the exit music, and you would still be talking
because you do care. What I don't care is that it doesn't bother you. It doesn't bother me that they are saying it because it's.
I think it does. I think it does, Jared.
It's who they are.
Jared, I'm going to disagree with you. I think it does bother you.
What bothers me is the disingenuousness of, you know, and the
there
hypocrisy.
There you go. It does bother you.
If Russ, there's not a problem with Russ being different.
I love you, Jared. You're one of my favorites.
Jared.
I want to put you on the board, but I'm not there to do it. Thank you, Jared.
There you go. He's not bothered at all by it. It's totally everything's
totally fine.
It's all totally fine.
He just called to tell you how cool he was. Like a cucumber, just really cool.
I agree with Jared on one thing. He's just like, this is who they are.
Yeah.
He probably lived with that years ago. Like, this is just, they're crazy. That's just who they are. They march to their own beat. They're going to say whatever. They're going to do whatever.
All right.
It's not going to affect my fandom.
We're going to take a real quick break, Brock. We're going to come right back. The phone lines have been jammed on this nonstop. I got people hanging on. We'll see if we can grab some more of your calls. I know you also want to, Brock, give us what we actually need to watch for on Sunday as the actual football game is going to get played. Kind of looking forward to doing that as well. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right here. It's Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
They can say whatever they want. They can write whatever they want. At the end of this thing, Brock, the Seahawks are going to take the field for real on Sunday, and that's when you get to watch Russell Wilson do his thing. It's funny, man. The haters for Russell Wilson have never stopped, whether it was because from the outside when he was too short, or now apparently the inside where he hasn't been treated angrily enough by Pete mm-hmm. Carroll. It just seems like that's going to be his lot in life, to continue to battle against detractors, both from abroad and domestic. And yet he perseveres. He does his thing, and he's been one of the best quarterbacks in the game from the second he got into the NFL.
Just wait, Salky, until this season unfolds, for better or for worse, and then a contract has got to be talked about.
It's going to be a fascinating one.
Oh, just wait till all that too, because that's going to, you know, all this going to play a role in that negotiation. Which, oh my gosh, if this guy wins 9 games this year, 10 games this year, leads the league in touchdown passes and yards, can you imagine? You know, all the opportunity he has, and I think what will be a contract that will have to be revisited after this season.
206-421-3776, the phone number. We've had you guys hanging on. Everybody wants to weigh in on all of this. I think your question is a good one, Brock. If you were writing a story about what's happened from 2014 till today, what's on it? Like, what's the crux of what's the thesis statement you're making about how the Seahawks went from where they are to where they are now? I thought you had a really good point about breaking rule number one and protecting the team. I think there's something to do with just how you deal with aging in the NFL.
Yep.
As a team gets older, how do you want to handle it? As a team gets more and more smoke blown up their rear end, how do you want to handle it? As they get more and more entitled, how do you want to handle it? One of the prime things about the NFL is that the players don't have guaranteed contracts for the most part, which is why the coaches and organizations maintain more control than they do in baseball. Mm-hmm. Why that conversation we had yesterday about how baseball managers have to sit around lying for their players and just saying over and over again, yeah, no, everything's fine. You don't have to do that in football because you can just move on from that player if you don't like him. Well, as the Seahawks dealt with increasing expectation, increasing entitlement, and increasing age for their players, not to mention a salary cap. Yep. This is about how they chose to deal with it, and they made some mistakes, and they did some other things right. But the way the players, some of the ones who eventually lost out at the end, have dealt with it, I'm not sure that they've been on the right side.
Yeah, unlike the 2015 passing time cab that ages well, the NFL does not.
Mm-hmm.
It never ages well. And we do need to take some more calls because poor Jared tweeted us. Did you see that?
Oh, no.
He said, I feel attacked.
No, not
Jared,
at all.
No. Don't feel attacked, bro. That was a great call. You just do care.
you just lying to yourself.
Care. We all do care.
206-421-3776. Chris is in Seattle. Hi, Chris.
Hey, morning, guys.
Good morning.
This is the first time on the show, so apologies for any jitters.
All right.
So I actually really like the article, but players feel disrespected. Some players moved on. But it wasn't Russell who was being favoritized all the time. The defense actually was. There's no real offensive line options in the draft. All the ones who are available in free agency were just getting monstrous deals. And who did they decide to pay? They paid Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett. The list goes on and on. Instead of protecting your quarterback, they protected their defense.
That's a great point.
Man.
Yep. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, you could almost write a whole thesis on that if you wanted to. What happened to the demise of the Seahawks? Well, they just treated, you know, to one of our caller's points earlier in Spokane, and just treated their own too well. To your point there, Charles, well, they just paid everybody on defense. Can't do it. Isn't going to work, right? It's going to come back and bite you there eventually. And as those guys age and get injured and get old, and on defense especially, man, where you need young, fast, furious, and incentivized, and went the other way.
Let me grab one more call, Brock, and then we got to move on because I want to hear some of your thoughts of getting into Sunday. Let's grab Joe's in Toledo. Hi, Joe. Good morning.
How doing?
Good.
Man, I have just I talked to you yesterday, and you said that this article wasn't going to happen, and I wouldn't take a bet against you. That was pretty crazy timing. But,
the house has some advantages sometimes, Joe.
No kidding, right? But anyway, I just wanted to point out the irony of the whole article, because it's based around special treatment to Russell Wilson. But the complaints are that a quarterback is treated differently. And the way they handle acquisitions and player trades, that happens in every team. So it's like this group of people who are all disgruntled about special treatment are just mad that they aren't getting a special treatment different than any other team in the league.
I would tend to agree. I think Sherm wanted to be treated special, right? Don't you think Sherm just wanted to be treated special also?
Can you just imagine Sherm the quarterback?
Oh, God. We're sort of laughing about Sherman, but I mean, the sad thing is, it's hard to see him this way. Richard Sherman's responsible for the greatest play in the history of the Seattle Seahawks organization.
Yeah.
He is responsible for the single greatest play and maybe the greatest moment in the history of this organization. He's a fascinating human being. I fully support a lot of what he has to say about the future of the NFL and the way the Players Association needs to band together. I think he was ahead of his time in talking about how the media and other people in the league didn't recognize what he was doing because they're caught up in the past and not willing to think about the future. I think Sherman's been ahead of his time in a million different ways, and it's sad to see it go in this direction with pettiness and this sort of bitterness that I really don't think is necessary on his part.
Yeah, and the beauty, we get to see him twice, you know, and we'll get to see how old Richard does down there in San Francisco. That's the beauty of all of this. And come Sunday, Mike, we're going to have a whole lot more to talk about. 7 a.m. Monday morning and 9 a.m. with Coach Carroll than this. But it does sure dig up a lot of old emotion.
All right, in the meantime, Brock, we're actually going to see this team play for real on Sunday in Denver. What are we looking for?
I got five quick things here. I got about 2 minutes to do it. Number one for me, more than anything else, is I will be watching Russell, and I will be evaluating how much he trusts the people around him, how much he trusts an offensive line, how much he trusts his feet and his eyes, how much he trusts a new offensive coordinator who he's going to navigate these 60 minutes with for the first time, and it will all be new against a fast and furious Broncos front. That will be number one. Number two, I'm going to critical. I will be certainly watching Mr. Schottenheimer and how many explosive plays he can craft in the run game, in the play action game, in those shots down the field, everything that you love that you talked about earlier with Russell. How much does Schottenheimer put Russell and this offense in a position to do that? Number three, who's going to bring the thump? I can guarantee you that Case Keenum is going to do what Philip Rivers and what Case Keenum did and the new quarterback Kirk Cousins did in the preseason, and that is throw underneath. Christian Ponder did too. Throw underneath, 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 underneath. Who is going to bring the thunder? Not arm tackles. I'm talking stopping tackles and yards after contact on both sides with the Seahawks run game and with Denver checking it down will be one of the most telling statistics in this entire game. I feel like this game, I've said this 10 times today, is going to be lost or won in the fourth quarter. Russell's governor, his risk governor throughout will be fascinating. And then lastly, fifth and maybe most importantly, all right, special teams.
Yeah.
Go be special.
Yeah.
Go be special on the road. You know, you want to make a difference. You know, you want to help an offense out. You know, you want to help a young, inexperienced defense in spots. Go be special on special teams, Mr. Dixon, Seabass. Kick it from 60 yards in that thin air. And a little creativity in the return game or the kicking game, I wouldn't mind that either. So there's four or five things to keep an eye on over the 60 minutes. Sunday.
And I think we all know, or at least expect, that at the end of this thing, it's going to be close, and we're going to see what Russell Wilson and or Case Keenum have up their sleeves at the end of a game. And we saw it last night where Foles was able to make a couple of plays and Matt Ryan couldn't punch it in. That's
a game,
sort
man.
Of the way
that's
these things go,
league.
Right?
Yep, yep. Probably sort of some penalties, probably go. Be a little sloppy, probably the defense ahead. Certainly the pass rush will be formidable for Denver, and ultimately, let's see what happens in the final 15.
All right, before we wrap it up here with a little answer to the question, Jerk, would you like to hear the injury update from Pete Carroll in his interview with Doran Monson today?
Yes.
A lot of guys have been sort of in and out of practice this week. Here is the full injury report from Pete Carroll.
Well, yeah, there's always some stuff we're working through. We'll see. We'll see as we get to the game day. Everybody's going. Basically, Fluker's going to be in question, and we'll see how the other guys are. So, we'll know more on Saturday and Sunday.
Everybody's going. Fluker's dealing with some stuff.
So that means everyone's going on the trip.
So Deion Jordan.
He's going on the trip. That means everyone's going on the trip other than KJ, who's already been ruled out, and Shaquem starting. Everyone else going on the trip, that big old hamstring of Fluker's probably the most challenged in the least amount of
time. I like the way you talk about how big his hamstring is. Do you think that makes a difference in whether or not he plays and like how bad his hamstring injury is?
Like the size and the girth of it? No.
Does that matter, or is it just entertaining?
It's just, gosh, the thing is huge. It's a big man.
Let's answer your questions. Man, it's been an intense day with a lot going on. Let's lighten it up here a little bit. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Any question on any subject, we are here, and we are ready to answer them together next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, Jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
That's my question! The question, Jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, Jerk!
All right, let's answer your question, 710. 710, powered by Coors Light. It was a big day yesterday for Tiger, Brock.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, I went home, I was watching some of the Golf Channel. Tiger, they showed every single shot Tiger made, and occasionally they'd drop in another golfer.
Yep.
And he was there, right in the lead. Today, though, not so much.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you probably haven't heard because the Tiger people don't talk when he doesn't play well.
What happened?
He was even.
He's even for the day or for the tournament now?
No, for the day. Oh, but he was just even today. Okay. Now he's in, like, 10th place.
Gotcha. Next.
Let's see. Jerks. I like this question. What is your single favorite food to eat as a leftover?
Tough to beat pizza for me, man.
Well, we've talked about it because heating it up, how you heat it up is a big thing.
I can eat, but that can be eaten cold.
True.
Maybe. That can be reheated in the oven on a pizza stone and be phenomenal. It could be zapped for 30 seconds.
That's gross. Don't microwave your pizza.
Tremendous.
Never works that well when you microwave it. Have you tried the pan yet, like I've told you?
Yeah. So good.
So good. Crispy. It's awesome.
You get like kind of like fried cheese on there.
So good.
Yep.
Upside down in the pan. So good. I think the best leftover food is stuffing. I love leftovers.
Really good leftover.
Stuffing?
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Oh, no. I think stuffing might be the best leftover. Because, again, you can heat that up. That's okay. You can heat that up or you can eat it cold. It's good either way.
A baked potato actually is also really good.
Really?
Any kind of soup, because it sort of just sits in its own flavor and gets more flavorful.
Like a stew?
Yeah.
Chili? I'll buy that. I'll buy that for $1. Lydia's rocking a Rick Meyer jersey today. I feel like everyone should know that.
Let's go.
Does Rick Meyer say, let's
talk about QBs being treated unfairly, man? I mean, let's talk about that.
Do you tuck in the jersey?
No, I don't tuck in. Come on.
You don't tuck in. Okay.
Does Rick Meyer scream, let's go?
No, I don't know.
I mean, it's a cool jersey.
That's just a Lydia scream.
Okay.
Man, Rick Meyer played a long time, bro.
He did. Why didn't you play as long as Rick Meyer?
I'm an idiot. Let my mind get in the way, crying out loud.
I won't have that negative talk today, Brock. I won't have it.
Go read Russell's Trace Me thing again.
Okay.
Next question.
Jerks, why don't people have urinals in their houses?
Some do. Damon does.
Does he really?
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 Yeah.
In like a...
Yeah.
Like a basement?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like off of his...
In his man cave?
Cool theater room, yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Man
Todd
cave.
Todd does. A bunch of my former teammates do.
They have urinals. Why?
Sure.
Because why
kind of
do you
off
need
the
a
theater
toilet?
Room, right? Off of the
like,
TV room.
Is it
room
so hard to pee in a regular toilet? Why do you need a urinal for
because
it?
Because it's a lot easier.
It's easier to pee in a urinal.
Yeah, but it feels like everything's exposed. Like, I feel like that
mess.
Would smell bad over time.
Nope.
No?
Nope.
I guess I've never really thought about having a urinal.
Yep.
Makes sense for you and your three girls.
Yeah, I would. I have my own personal urinal.
Financially savvy.
Absolutely.
I mean,
what does it cost to buy a urinal?
Do you respect, like, the new urinals? Do you like the ones that have, like, all the funky shapes? Or do you like just the old school, like, elementary?
Shapes?
Yeah,
shapes.
Some of
shapes.
Them are just
okay.
Shaped differently.
I like a good trough. Yeah.
Can we add this to the list of things I didn't think we'd be talking about today? Abstaining from sex and urinal.
Yeah.
Different urinal designs.
There's just a few things that you don't always expect.
Welcome to Friday.
Yeah.
I don't understand how those waterless ones work. It doesn't make any sense.
The answer is they don't. They don't very well.
Hmm.
Yeah. I did some lobbying for one of those companies. They were trying to get them installed throughout L.A. City. Yeah, they don't work.
So 10 times you walk into our office boys' room, 10 times, the door to the toilet's open and the urinal's open, and you just got to go.
No, I mean, I use the urinal if it's there, but I don't know why. Yeah.
10 out of 10 you go urinal for the
But I don't really have a good read. It's just what, you know, it's what you do. It's not like I have a problem peeing at home.
Right.
Jerks, what is your biggest relationship deal breaker?
Do you go seat up all the time if you are in the toilet? Do you always kick the seat up?
Usually.
Or do you think you're a good enough aimer? You're like, I'll
there are moments. There are probably times. But I'd say 9 out of 10 times.
All right. Sorry. What was the next one?
What's your biggest relationship deal breaker? Hairy armpits? It's a deal breaker for me.
Well, we're all in committed relationships. Largely.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lids, is there a deal breaker? Is there something that's just an absolute deal breaker? Could you date somebody that just hates baseball?
We'd probably have a tough time.
Yeah.
They'd probably have more of a tough time with me than I would with them.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, you don't like those hairy armpits, do you?
Nope. I have a problem with them.
Never will.
Hey, for those of you texting in saying, Tiger's 2 back of the lead. No, he's not. He's 5 back. Spare me. You liar. You Tiger people. He's even today. He's 8-under for the tournament after shooting 8-under yesterday. Shoffley's 13-under.
Is he done? Is his round over?
Yeah, they're both
done. He just shot even today?
Yeah.
Putter just couldn't get going.
Okay. Shoffley, just a nice little 71. Like, clown that guy.
Shoffley went 63-64. Justin Rose, 7-under today. He's 11-under.
Okay.
Come on.
All right.
But as soon as Tiger's there, go Tiger!
Hate on Russell. Hate on Tiger.
I'm not hating on him. I just think the people that love him are, you know, blind.
Yeah.
But moving on.
Next.
Like, what do you want these people to do?
Next. Give me one more.
Also comment when Tiger isn't as good. Oh, man, that was a bummer for Tiger.
He shot a 7.
Yeah, even. And a day where other people are shooting 6 and 7 under.
And yesterday he shot 8 under on a day other people were shooting even.
And that was amazing. Now he's 5 back.
All right. Okay. Next.
Next question.
Jerks, what's your favorite Burt Reynolds movie? I'd probably say the original Longest Yard.
Yeah. Yeah. Smokey and the Bandit is pretty funny. How old is he? 82?
I think so.
82.
Early 80s for sure.
Burt was 82.
Brock, what's your favorite college stadium you've broadcast a game from?
This one. Tomorrow. Tomorrow, 12:30 local ABC, Colorado, Nebraska, the old rivalry renewed. Scott Frost. It's actually going to be Scott Frost.
That's your guy.
In the state of Nebraska tomorrow. They're putting Tom Osborne in their Hall of Fame. It's going to be 91,000 just jacked up out of their mind. What does Stacy Rossi like
Hyped
to say?
Hyped and jacked. Didn't their last game get canceled too?
Yes,
so won't
did.
They be extra jacked up?
Oh, extra, extra, extra.
Extra.
Yep, on the road, this is my favorite one for sure.
Cool. You ready for Sunday?
No, not yet.
You're not ready yet?
No. I'm very curious if I can just kind of watch this with what we talked about. I want to be more fun. Want to be maybe not as intense. Want to just be a period of learning and discovery and without all the expectations. And while I can say all of that, I think when the ball kicks off 1 o'clock Monday or Sunday, I think I'll just be as wired as ever.
Text message, how's Spieth doing, Salk? Weird you never talk about him when he's missing cups. Cuts, excuse me. Good point. He's been terrible.
Yes.
He's moving in the wrong direction again today. He's been
Why
off.
Have you been tweeting about it, Mike?
I should. Jordan, get it together.
Stick it, Salk.
You can mad at me. That's fine. We can all be mad at each other. It's the way of the world.
I'll punt that.
What'd you say?
I'll punt that.
I would, too.
Guess you're jerks. All right, we'll see you guys Monday morning. The Pete Carroll Show will be at 9:30. What are we going to be talking about?
Please be 1-0. Win 24-23. Final seconds, please.
Special teams better be good.
Please.
They better run the ball, and they better find a way at the end of the game to win it.
And go Storm. Go Gator done tonight.
Oh, man. What a weekend. This is going to be a blast. We'll
and
see you guys
Mariners.
Monday morning. We had so much to talk about. 7 a.m. We'll see you then.
And go Huskies.
Until then, the hay.
It's in the barn.
See everybody.
That's what we do. We're fans.
Get to the chopper!